We've been able to keep people employed, which has made such a difference in so many people's lives. And I'm incredibly worried about what's going to happen when that JobKeeper goes away.
Australia enters a new COVID crunch. It's Wednesday, March 31st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online. We're at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, floating China's naval abilities. Turning around, press freedom. U.S. war powers debated. Dealing with young immigrants. Seeking equal representation. It's all on today's VOA Asia. First, we begin with our daily update on Myanmar. Two more people were killed as thousands of pro-democracy demonstrators took to the streets again Tuesday in Myanmar's largest city of Yangon and in several other towns to oppose military rule of the country since the February 1st coup. Myanmar security forces have since killed at least 512 civilians, according to the Assistance Association for Political Prisoners. Trash piled up at intersections in Yangon as protesters launched a garbage strike, and security forces reportedly fatally shot a man in the south and killed another person in a northern town. Three of the country's armed ethnic rebel groups, meanwhile, threatened the junta on Tuesday with retaliation if it does not stop killing protesters. On Monday, security forces killed 14 people during demonstrations in towns across the country, following the deadliest weekend since the February military coup, according to the Assistance Association for Political Prisoners. Meanwhile, more COVID issues for Australia. The country's multi-billion dollar wage subsidy, credited with saving hundreds of thousands of jobs during the COVID-19 pandemic, has ended. A cluster of infections has forced the Queensland city of Brisbane into a snap three-day lockdown. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The $53 billion JobKeeper program was the biggest economic package in Australian history. It guaranteed workers a paycheck, even when businesses were forced to close during lockdowns. In Canberra, the government has said with the recovery underway, it's time for the economy to support itself. Senior officials have said JobKeeper would be replaced by targeted stimulus programs, the first stage of which will be an expansion of the scheme to pay part of the wages of apprentices. But critics believe the move is premature, and the end of the wage subsidy scheme will put many jobs in jeopardy. Leanne Harwood is the Managing Director for Japan, Australasia and Pacific at IHG Hotels and Resorts. She had hoped JobKeeper would be expanded to help the tourism industry.
Without it, we would have had to make a lot more people redundant. Sadly, we would have lost a lot more people. And we probably would have had to close a lot more doors of our hotels. And right now, we've been able to keep most of them open, which has been, quite frankly, a godsend, having that JobKeeper to be able to do that. You know, we've been able to keep people employed, which has made such a difference in so many people's lives. And I'm incredibly worried about what's going to happen when that JobKeeper goes away.
The pandemic sent Australia into recession for the first time since the 1990s. But there is evidence the economy is rebounding strongly. Recent figures from the Australian Bureau of Statistics have shown Australia's jobless rate dropped from 6.6% in December 2020 to 6.4% in January. Australia has mostly contained the virus, but a small but growing cluster of infections in Brisbane has forced the authorities to order a three-day lockdown starting Monday, and stay-at-home orders will apply. The Queensland State Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk said she was very concerned. However, in neighbouring New South Wales, more COVID-19 restrictions are being eased on Monday. Singing and dancing is now permitted, allowing nightclubs to reopen. Sports stadiums and theatres can also operate with 100% capacity, and masks are no longer mandatory on public transport. A nationwide mass vaccination program is also underway. Australia has recorded just over 29,200 coronavirus cases since the pandemic began. 909 people have died, according to the health department. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Read, see, and hear the latest on our website at voanews.com. And you can always follow the latest updates with us on Twitter at VOA Asia, as well as on Facebook. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. More demonstrators killed in Myanmar anti-coup protests. United Nations Human Rights Group deeply concerned over China's treatment of Uyghurs. 3 female polio vaccinators killed in Afghanistan. Pakistan launches polio vaccination drive amid surge in COVID-19 infections. China approves major overhaul of Hong Kong electoral system. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and our website at voanews.com. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Tensions were in the open the other week when diplomats from the United States and China met face-to-face in Alaska. Human rights, trade tariffs, and increasing Chinese naval activity are not new issues, but they were the topics of pointed barbs traded during discussions. Retired Admiral James Stavridis spent 37 years in the military serving in NATO and as the head of the U.S. Southern Command. He has spent his career dealing with the world's great naval powers. VOA's Jayla De Franceschi spoke with him about the current state of affairs between Beijing and Washington.
China controls almost the entire South China Sea, claiming it has irrefutable sovereignty over waters that carry nearly two-thirds of world trade and much of its energy resources to markets. Washington fears that if China is allowed to define a new area of geopolitical dominance, it will destabilize Asia and the world. Beijing has accused Washington of deliberately stoking tensions by holding large military drills and deploying additional warships to the contested sea. The United States wants to convince China that it is in its interests to use the rule of law to pursue its goals. But retired Admiral James Stavridis says conflicting visions could lead to accidental war.
Both sides, I think, have unfortunately the possibility of miscalculating. The United States could believe that they could push forward again and again, and that China would not want to respond militarily. China, on the other hand, could believe that the United States would back off if China fired the initial shot or two.
By 2034, China could outpace the United States in critical sectors of cybersecurity and creating advanced offensive cyber tools. China is also becoming more nationalistic, contends Stavridis. Geostrategic instability is spreading in other parts of Asia as well. Still, there are areas where the two superpowers could see cooperation, says Stavridis.
The U.S. and China together are the only possible combination that can move the needle on global warming and climate change. A second one would be to prepare for what we've just gone through. What about the next pandemic? In a much better world, the U.S. and China would be cooperating to help us all prepare for that.
Whether the future holds cooperation, conflict, or some carefully negotiated middle ground remains to be seen. But it's clear that the U.S. and China's relationship going forward will have an oversized impact on the world. For Jayla De Franceschi in Washington, NRI's VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, Thailand Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha denied claims that villagers who fled Myanmar to Thailand due to military airstrikes were forced out of Thailand, saying the refugees returned to Myanmar on their own. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us today for VOA Asia. Journalists in Bangladesh say the 2018 Digital Security Act is being used to harass and jail members of the media, including Mushtaq Ahmed, who died in prison. Sanjana Feroz for VOA Bangla tells us more.
Since it was passed in 2018, journalists and media experts have warned that Bangladesh's Digital Security Act could be open to abuse. Those warnings grew louder after the death in custody of journalist Mushtaq Ahmed. Photojournalist Shofiqul Islam Kajol was detained for almost 2 months over social media posts.
I was arrested and taken to prison, and it's said in the news that I went missing. You know what happened. In fact, I do not want to go back to that context, and you also have an idea why I don't want to. I cannot speak the truth about what happened.
Journalists in Bangladesh already come under pressure from both the government and opposition. The Digital Security Act increased the risk of arrest, with over 50 journalists charged under it in the first half of 2020.
This digital security law is in force more on journalists in the outskirts of Dhaka, and there were many instances where journalists have been harassed for speaking the truth.
International media organizations and local journalists say provisions in the law mean it could be used to impede journalism and have called on the government to repeal it.
We have demanded changes in the Digital Security Act so that journalists or any other person who expresses their opinion in any form can be ensured of security from law enforcement. The non-bailable clause needs to be changed, and at the same time, no one can misuse it.
The Committee to Protect Journalists spoke with the government officials in 2017, who acknowledged problems with the previous internet law known as the ICT Act and promised to implement safeguards. But media are still being targeted.
The ICT Act, which was essentially completely repackaged with a different name, now the Digital Security Act, and it is, if anything, being used and misused even more than we saw a few years ago.
Broadcasters say concerns over abuse of the law are justified.
Section 41 of this act is very much one of a police state. If an officer believes any news report of mine or anyone can harm the state or be a security threat, then they can search and arrest the person without an arrest warrant.
Government official says a committee has been formed to ensure the law is enforced correctly.
If anybody and everybody alleges digital a crime under the Digital Security Act, I am saying that immediately it will not be registered as a case. It will go to a cell where the allegations will be taken, examined, and after examining, if these allegations really formulate a case under the Digital Security Act, only then it will be registered as a case under the Digital Security Act.
The use of the act to harass journalists and the February death of journalist Mushtaq Ahmed, who was arrested under the terms of the act and died in prison, are believed to be behind the government's plans to make changes to the act, journalists say. Sanjana Feroz, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. China has changed the number of seats in Hong Kong's legislature from 70 to 90. Only 20 of the expanded seats will be elected by the public. You'll find this and all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. You're listening to VOA Asia. The United States has been involved in many global conflicts in efforts to stop violence and protect vulnerable civilians. Now, U.S. lawmakers are taking a new look at a decades-old law that grants U.S. presidents sweeping powers to take military action overseas. As VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, Congress may attempt to take back some of that power.
For the first time in nearly two decades, the congressional authorizations justifying U.S. conflicts in Afghanistan and in Iraq, and then stretched to include engagements ranging from Syria to Yemen to the strike against Iranian General Qasem Soleimani, are under consideration. House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Representative Gregory Meeks.
Over 20 years, successive administrations have interpreted and reinterpreted the text of that resolution to use it in new countries against an expanding list of loosely connected groups. This process has all but cut Congress out of its fundamental responsibility to decide issues of war and peace.
Under the U.S. Constitution, Congress has the power to declare war, but the 2001 and 2002 authorizations of use of military force gave U.S. presidents broad powers to engage overseas. Democratic Representative Jim McGovern.
Presidents increasingly go it alone and tell Congress the bare minimum about military actions. Presidents and their lawyers look to a 20-year-old authorization of force to justify their actions. If we do nothing, we shouldn't be surprised by the outcome.
That debate revived earlier this month following renewed tensions between the U.S. and Iran. The White House signaling it is willing to work with Congress to repeal those authorizations in favor of a narrower framework. Cardozo School of Law professor Rebecca Ingber.
They should include concrete consequences, like a funding cutoff with a shorter clock. Put the president and executive branch officials on notice from the outset that if they can't get congressional support for their actions, their funding has an expiration date.
Past efforts to repeal the authorizations have met with opposition from presidents on both sides of the aisle, as well as Republican criticism it could hamper the U.S. response to terrorist threats. Republican Representative Michael McCaul.
We have the same goal here. We may have just a little bit different means of getting about it. We should also avoid dismissive talk of forever wars, because it implies that our ongoing counterterrorism engagements are illegal and unnecessary.
As a senator, Biden worked for greater congressional oversight over presidential war powers. Now that he's in the White House, there is a sense Congress can reassert control over one of its most important responsibilities. Former White House counsel Bob Bauer.
There is a fundamental question of leveling with the American public and holding the president accountable for the justification that he or she proposes to provide.
Legislation repealing those decades-old authorizations has already been introduced in the U.S. Senate. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Making headlines in Asia, Nepal's government has ordered schools to shut down for 4 days after air pollution in the country reached hazardous levels. The country is located between China and India, two of the world's biggest polluters. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, immigration continues to be a difficult issue for the United States. In recent months, more than 18,000 unaccompanied children are in U.S. custody since they crossed the southern U.S. border in what has become an early test for the administration of President Joe Biden. Michelle Quinn joins us with more.
When it comes to his handling of the surge in migrants at the border with Mexico, President Joe Biden gets a low score. 57% of those surveyed in a recent ABC News Ipsos poll say they disapprove of the way he is dealing with the situation. Although Biden has urged migrants to stay home, critics say his policy shifts have led to the thousands attempting the dangerous journey north. Biden stopped construction of a border wall that former President Donald Trump advocated and embraced what he said would be more humane immigration policies. The bigger flow of migrants started last April when Trump was in office, but the numbers have grown under Biden. Some lawmakers have made trips to the border to see the situation for themselves.
To me, it was shocking. I think the president and the vice president need to go down there, see what I saw, see what the other Republicans and Democrat congressmen are coming down there. There are things that we can do immediately to address the challenges there. But right now, it is open borders. It's a humanitarian and also health crisis that we need to address.
The Biden administration says the border is not open and that individuals and families are being turned away. The surge of migrants is cyclical, they argue, and a multi-pronged approach is needed.
They're not the result of one administration's policies or another administration's policies. They're the result of, for example, weather disasters in the region. They're the result of people fleeing poverty and violence.
Biden has tapped Vice President Kamala Harris to lead the administration's response to the influx of unaccompanied migrant youths, the only category of asylum seekers currently allowed to pursue claims in the United States. The administration has set up 9 emergency shelters to house the children before sending them on to more permanent housing. More than 80% of the children have a family member in the U.S. For more than 40%, that person is a parent. Ultimately, the solution, Biden says, involves working with countries such as Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador so that people there don't feel they need to leave their homes to come to the U.S. But that will take time. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Although Washington, D.C. is the seat of U.S. political power, its residents have no representative with voting rights in Congress, nor rights of full home rule because of its unique status as the federal capital. But advocates for making Washington, D.C. a state say they see more potential than ever, as VOA's Carol Gunsberg shares details.
When rioters attacked the U.S. Capitol in a failed attempt to stop Congress from certifying the presidential election of Joe Biden, Washington's Mayor Muriel Bowser lacked the authority to call in the National Guard to help police. The episode has given new momentum to the District of Columbia's long-running effort to become a state.
I'm upset that 706,000 residents of the District of Columbia did not have a single vote in that Congress yesterday, despite the fact that our people were putting their lives on the line to protect our democracy.
The district lacks local autonomy. Its budget and local laws, unlike those of states, are subject to approval by Congress. Its residents pay federal taxes but cannot send someone to Congress to cast votes on their behalf. Eleanor Holmes Norton has championed statehood for 3 decades as the district's non-voting delegate to the House of Representatives.
The United States is the only country that denies the residents of its capital city the same rights that everybody else has.
Norton introduced legislation, passed by the House last year, that would shrink the federal district to 2 square miles, including the Capitol, White House, and other major government buildings and monuments. The district's remaining 66 square miles would become the new state. The legislation was reintroduced in January with even more backers.
What is important is that we have the support of the new president of the United States, Joe Biden, as well as the support of the leaders of the Senate and of the House. That's a trifecta that's hard to beat.
But Republicans in Congress oppose statehood. Because the district's voters overwhelmingly support Democrats, that would mean 2 more Democrats in a Senate that is now evenly divided between the 2 major parties. Republican Congressman Dusty Johnson says Washingtonians do deserve representation, just not in a separate new state. His proposed legislation would make most of the district part of the neighboring state of Maryland without adding seats in the House or Senate.
And if what D.C. residents really want is suffrage, if what they want is a voice in the United States Senate, my plan gives them that. I would say in the last 200 years, every single state that has been made a state has had either 6 million residents or has been 10,000 square miles. Washington, D.C. fails both of those tests.
A House panel will consider Norton's bill this month. While it may pass in the democratically controlled House, it is unlikely to pass in the Senate, where Democrats have only a slim margin of control. Carol Gunsberg, VOA News, Washington.
Join us again at this same time for another edition of VOA Asia. In the meantime, you can find us online. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Look us up under our name, VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us. And thanks to our staff, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.